Good morning. 9:33. It's 9:33 on a Saturday morning, November the 9th, I believe. Hi. So yeah, I slept in this morning. It was daylight before I crawled out of bed. I spent the morning writing. Got 1,500 words in today, which is pretty much what I've done total for the last 2 days. 18 minutes on the first mile. Yeah. 17 and a half, even accounting for the photo break. I'm not moving very fast today. My hips are sore. It's been a problem for several days now, getting out here and walking along and having my hips ache. I don't know if it's because I took too many days off. I need to rebuild the muscles. I'm not getting some kind of nutrient or what. Do the hip shake baby, I guess. Oh. So I've had coffee, I've had breakfast, I'm sort of awake. I still got my head in a story. It's just crossed over the point where Tanith is now at Gertie's cottage and learning more about how Gertie lives, how she survives on her own. That's been one of the challenges, is how does she survive on her own? How does she get by? In the far north, where the growing season is very, very short, how does she grow enough? How does she harvest enough to get it through the winter? And the answer is, she's not alone. Or at least, not entirely alone. I have to thank Brian Gamblin for helping me with one of the problems that I had about why is Gertie a hermit? Why is she living alone, far from civilization? Well, she's not alone. She lives alone. In the winter, there isn't anyone else around. A few trappers, perhaps, back in the mountains in their cabins, hold up for winter fur trapping. But how does she survive? What does she eat? What does she drink? So Tanith is in the process of working through all of this now. Gertie isn't really being very helpful in terms of the old witch woman knowledge that Gertie's come for. In fact, she's not even much of an herbalist. She has a few common herbs tucked away, but nothing exotic, nothing new, nothing that would justify Tanith going, other than so far an oblique reference that the herb lore is one of the things that Tanith is bringing, not one of the things she's going away with, which actually raises the question, well, if that's what she's bringing, then what shall we learn? And of course the answer is, why you're not going mad, I suppose, is the best way to say it. And Brand helped me with why being alone mattered in this context. And so far, Tanith has been quite patient, and they're in the process of rinsing out clay jugs. Because it turns out that Gertie Pinecrest makes her own cider from the old ancient trees that grow around her cottage, from the apples that fall from those trees. So yeah, my goal was 50,000 words by tomorrow. I'm at like 33.5, 33.4 at the moment. So I need 16 and a bit. Two 8K days would do it, but that's not going to happen, I'm pretty sure. If I go back, start grinding, I perhaps could get some, but the kitchen is a shambles. My wife is sick. I'm still gonna have to go to spend the evening with Shakespeare this evening. Last night's show was so much better than the first night's show. Opening night jitters or something. Second night was wonderful. The structure of the play, the action of the play, the way the cast evolved as the play went along. It was quite gorgeous. It was quite rich. There was a lot going on stage. And I don't know if the kids really understood what was going on, but it certainly seemed... it seemed like there was a lot more going on to me. So yeah, Midsummer Night's Dream, the fairies were creepy. Oberon and Titania were likewise just a bit on the squirrely side. I suppose there's a certain level of otherworldliness that they needed, and they certainly were otherworldly. Then if they... There's a certain... I don't know, there was a certain... patternedness about them that wasn't, fine silks and elegant robes. They were very much less the sort of classical, elegant king and queen of the Fae than other representations of them that I've seen or read. And it worked nicely because when you think about it, they live in the forest. They live in a magical realm where leaves are not foreign matter. They're not something different. They are who they are. So the makeup with flowers on their faces and leaves in their hair was at one level at odds with the smooth elegance that one normally attributes to Oberon, Titania, and yet the darkness of them stealing away a boy from a king of India to be their handmaiden, to be their page. And the rather disturbing image of them heading off to their bower for a night of revelry with a boy in tow. It's not something you really think about when you think about Shakespeare, but it was, you know, it's definitely there. It's what they do. That's what, how it worked. It wasn't like he got left behind to play with the fairies. So I don't know. So it was very well done. It was very interesting. It was a very rich production. It was a very, inspired one, Monkpool. The last few days I've been reintroduced to an old musical friend, Ian Drury. Ian Drury and the Blockheads. I haven't thought of Ian Drury in decades. But on my Pandora station sometime this week, an Ian Drury song done by Madness came up. Drip Fed Fred. That is, it's one of the sort of classic pieces that I remember from my youth that are very, very interesting, very exciting, very sort of dark and gritty, and mostly fun. Mostly just fun. So I added Madness to my big band lineup, and now all I've got is, all I'm getting on that channel now is Clash and English Beat, and a lot of Madness. But the one Madness song that I've upvoted is Drip Fed Fred, and that's the one I haven't heard again since. Other than I looked up the video. The video is hysterically funny. It's not. It's very much an early days of video. A lot of stuff that's very over the top. A lot of very self-conscious kinds of imagery. I think it's a very British set of images. The mob boss riding around in a clerical palanquin carried by four priests and led by a bishop. With four of his hooligans marching along as bodyguards, outriders, as it were. Yeah, it's very fun. It's very interesting. Drip Fed Fred by Madness. Get a chance. It was something a little bit old school, a little bit gritty, a little bit what ska was like before it was ska. Sort of a transitional period. Although I guess Madness is technically a ska band. They have a lot of numbers that are very much in the ska tradition of drum and guitar, minimal arrangement, voices in unison. Very fast beat. This morning I heard Louis Prima doing Jump, Jive, and Wail, which is a lot of fun. Which is certainly from a very different era. So yeah, I'm enjoying my station that I have constructed from Big Bad Voodoo Daddies, Squirrel Nut Zippers, and Madness. Which sounds like a recipe for all kinds of funny things. One thing I haven't heard, I may have to rip it and load it. I probably got it loaded as MP3 somewhere. I have a lot of Squirrel Nut Zipper CDs from back in the olden times. And ripping those down to MP3 so I could put them on my phone so I can listen to them would be kind of fun. In the past I've been really leery about not overloading my phone, but I've got like a 16 gig Chark chip in it, and I was only a few months ago that I realized that I had every podcast I'd ever recorded still loaded on this machine. So it's like, oh wow, okay, clean that off. I'm under a gig, so it's not like I don't have space for it. It's not like I don't have room for it. Rather warm afternoon, warm morning. This is still morning in November. It's tough because I get my head in Tanith's book and it's spring, and then I come out for my walk and it's fall. So my brain is a little confused as to what the season might be. Plane heading over in the direction of the airport. There is an airport out there somewhere, out to the east of us. I don't have a really good understanding of where out there it is. But I know that there is a local airport. Small planes. And it's from the olden days. It's from the early days of aviation when getting to Greeley by automobile was possible, but a lot less certain back in biplane days, where a lot of ranches had their own landing strips because it was the fastest way to get around. And before anybody really needed a license to fly, which I suppose might argue for why some of those ranchers died off, because they didn't have pilot's license and they all went up in the air and died. But I don't know. There, Sky King, the old TV show from the 50s and 60s. Was it the Songbird? Songbird and the Songbird 2. That was very much a real thing. I don't know if it still is or not, but the idea that a rancher would have a plane was not completely beyond the pale. I mean, it wasn't usual, it wasn't normal. Most people didn't, but they weren't unheard of. Let's look up some more about the early history of aviation in this area. My hips don't hurt quite as much as they did when I started. That's good. Got them moving. That's probably part of the problem. I still ache. Ooh. Yeah, just barely under 19 minutes on the back half. I'm just barely crawling these days. Holy cow. I need to get back into shape. I need to get moving. Although it's probably not going to happen with winter coming and footing becoming less and less solid. But I can get in shape and get ready for the spring and start working on my speed when the ground is dry again next spring. But in the meantime, I am at the back gate. Tomorrow is another day, and with any luck at all, I'll talk to you then.